but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I feel like there's been a lot of serious stuff going on in sports lately. This coach must go. That coach just got fired. Why is Tom Brady wearing a headset? Why is he in the press box? Why is an owner in the... So much serious stuff going on. The absurdity of sports, and by the way, sports is supposed to be this diversion, this entertainment. The absurdity of sports on display all around us. I was in the supermarket earlier today, walked into the supermarket, and ran into a guy who is a diehard Buffalo Bills fan. And he said to me, he came over and he said, you know, man, I really hope the Bills win tonight. Man, I really hope they win tonight. Bills have the Miami Dolphins in a Thursday night football game that we will air right here on 750 The Game if you're listening in Portland. But I thought to myself, like, well, what if the Bills don't win? What then? You're still going to watch the game. You're still going to be highly entertained or engaged with this game. And by the way, I expect Buffalo to win that game. Steven, you got Buffalo in this game?
Yeah, I got Buffalo over the Dolphins.
Yeah. So, he said, I sure hope they win. He was very serious about it. And it got me thinking about all the absurdities in sports. By the way, some sports fans say some weird things, don't they? Sports fans will say things like, how in the world could that guy drop that ball? Whether it's in baseball or football with a receiver. Like, how in the world can that guy drop the ball? Forgetting that, like, you know, having 50,000 or 70,000 fans in, all around you would put a little bit of a microscope on you. Having some 250-pound linebacker running towards you about to smash you would also give you something to think about. It's very easy to imagine why that guy would drop the ball if there were a situation where you were out there on the field. And I also think, like, I am all about the same guy who is the Buffalo Bills fan told me that he's going to wear his Josh Allen jersey watching the game tonight. And I thought, okay, like, grown man wearing a jersey. We've had this debate on the show. And then I started thinking, like, what are the other age cutoffs that we have to have with sports fans in apparel? Like, how old is too old to wear a pair of Jordans? Asking for a friend. Like, how old is too old to put on a pair of Air Jordans and just kind of wear them if you were a grown-up?
Never, man. You can go Jordans your whole life.
Says a guy who probably owns a pair of Jordans. Or you do it?
I did have a pair that I wore for a long time, yeah, up until like a month ago. But I kind of wore them out.
Don't you think, like, okay, and I had a grandfather who was in his 80s who was kind of a hip guy. He would wear, like, high-top sneakers and nice sunglasses and, you know, jeans that, like, a grandpa wouldn't wear. Like, and I always thought, gosh, he's kind of trendy and he's kind of cool. But I don't know if I could pull that off. I don't know if I could pull off a pair of Jordans. Like, it, you know, in your 50s or 60s, can you wear a pair of Jordans?
You're probably right. It's probably, like, 50 is, like, the cutoff date for it. But, I mean, I'm still 38, so I can still pull it off.
Yeah,
but I feel like 50 probably is the right number.
Then everybody always says, like, I don't mind the guy who wears the jersey. If your team is playing a game, like if your team is competing in a game that day, you're headed to the stadium, you're headed to the arena, I'm okay with you wearing a jersey. But where I get a little weird is when I see a dude like just on a Wednesday walking around, you know, the Safeway wearing his Patrick Mahomes jersey. And I'm going, you know, I don't know about this. I'm not so sure about it. You know, am I right to say that? Or, you know, do you think of people who wear jerseys?
I will wear jerseys when I'm going to, like, the pool because it's, like, you know, it's a tank top, so I will do that. Yeah. But I usually don't wear them out in public. Like, if I'm going to go somewhere, if I'm going to the store, if I'm going to go to a game or something, I'm definitely not going to wear a jersey if I'm going to a game. But usually, I don't wear a lot of jerseys when I'm out in public, unless it's, like, super hot in summertime. So I don't have a problem with it. But I also wear jerseys, John, of players that are very, like, aren't even in the NBA or aren't in the NFL anymore. Like, I don't wear current players anymore because I am older than all of them. And so I feel like that's a little weird.
I also think that's weird if you are wearing a jersey. I can remember one time, remember when Rasheed Ross got traded from the Blazers? He got traded to the Atlanta Hawks. People forget he made like a pit stop in Atlanta for like 2 days and then was traded onto the Detroit Pistons. And there was, you know, they made an Atlanta Hawks Rasheed Wallace jersey and it was out for like a blink, right? So right when he got traded, right away, the jersey manufacturer created like a run of Rasheed Wallace Atlanta Hawks jerseys. It wasn't very long. And I remember I went online and got one, all right? I went online and bought one, and I thought, you know, I would write a column about wearing that Rasheed Wallace Atlanta Hawks jersey around Portland and do it kind of as a bit, you know? And so I put on the Atlanta Hawks jersey, and I'm not a jersey guy, and I wore it over to the Moda Center, what was then the Rose Garden Arena, and the first person who saw me was Quintel Woods. And Quintel Woods came rushing up to me and he was like, how much do you want for that jersey? And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, that is sweet. He goes, I would pay you. He goes, I'll give you $200 for that jersey right now. And I was like, no, I don't want to sell it. I'm using it. He says, I'll buy it from you afterwards. And I said, nah, I don't know if that's a good idea for me to be in a business transaction with Quintel Woods. And Rasheed Wallace, people may remember, Rasheed Wallace was a visiting player. He had come to, like, it wasn't very long after his trade that he came to Moda Center, and I had that Rasheed Atlanta Hawks jersey on, and Rasheed did a double take, and he was like, where did you get that? And because he didn't even know they made them. And so at the end of it, I did. I put it on eBay, and I sold it well above what I paid for it to some, you know, basketball collector fan. But I remember feeling really weird wearing it, especially me being like the sports columnist guy, and I was wearing Sheed's Atlanta Hawks jersey, and then I wrote about the reaction I got around Moda Center from people who were stopping me to go, oh my gosh, I can't stand the guy. I'm glad he's gone. Other people saying, no, this is going to be the worst thing ever. You know, no, he's going to end up with an NBA championship in Detroit. And here I had this Rasheed Wallace, very unusual Atlanta Hawks Rasheed Wallace jersey.
I was going to say, I have the same type of thing because my favorite player is Brandon Roy of all time. I don't actually have a Blazers Brandon Roy jersey. I have a Washington jersey for Brandon Roy, and I have a T-Wolves Brandon Roy jersey where he played 5 games with Minnesota. And I will, when I wear that out, and I still do wear that one out sometimes because it's my favorite jersey, people will give me a double take, like, who is number 3 on the Timberwolves? They're like, that's not Kevin Garnett. That's not Stephon Marbury. Like, that, they don't know who it is. I'm like, it's Brandon Roy. And they look at it, they're like, oh, I didn't even know he played for them. So I understand your issue there. It's one of my favorite things because, Rasheed played, what, 1 game with Atlanta? So
one game.
It's going to be the double take. And, you know, Brandon Roy played 5 for Minnesota. So I absolutely love that.
Yeah. And I should have kept it. It was such a novelty. But I probably could have got Quintel to go higher, 500,000, you know. But I didn't think it was a good look to have the guy who's covering the team in a business transaction with a player on the team. You know,
it's just like gotten his trading card.
It was going to be a really awkward transaction, but he was so, like, he was a jersey collector. He was a guy, like, he was a jersey guy, and he was like, man, I have to have that. They aren't for sale. Like, I have to have that jersey. And I was like, Quintel, I cannot sell you this jersey. I'm not going to sell it to you. What I didn't have the heart to tell him is he could have gone on eBay and probably bought it, been the high bidder. We got a great show for you today. It is a Civil War special. And by that, I mean Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver, will be with us in the 3 o'clock hour coming up shortly. And Bryce Betcher, the Oregon linebacker, will be joining us in the 4 o'clock hour. So 1 hour apart, we're going to talk to these two cats. Everybody knows the point spread on this Oregon State-Oregon game is out of control. It is the biggest point spread in the history of the Civil War rivalry. Oregon State is a 35.5 point underdog to Oregon in this game, and I am left kind of looking at the Civil War game and going, the Ducks are playing on the road at Penn State next weekend. It's a possibility that Oregon could peek ahead at that game or maybe just try to stay healthy and, you know, empty, go to the reserves in the second or third quarter. I don't know what Dan Lanning would do there, maybe third quarter. And I know that they might try to keep the playbook vanilla. I think that might keep, you know, you have to be on alert here for the backdoor cover if you are watching this game. But I think Oregon, you know, Oregon's got so many athletes and so much big play potential. I just have a hard time seeing the Beavers defense effectively stopping them. I saw Fresno State run off, you know, some big time big plays in that game, and Oregon's got better athletes. And so I think Oregon State will try to do what Northwestern did in that, you know, they'll try to run the ball, they'll try to bloody the game up and shorten the game in the same way that the Wildcats did a week ago. But Oregon's just got too many playmakers, and I think Oregon will score about 48, 49 points in this game. I would be surprised to see Dan Lanning pour it on. I don't think he's interested in trying to get to 60 or 70, but I think, you know, they'll get comfortably ahead, and then I think it'll be on to Penn State. And so I kind of see it 49-7. I think Oregon covers the 35.5, but I am on guard for maybe like a backdoor cover the way that Northwestern, you know, came up with 14 points late in the game against Oregon. What do you think of this Civil War spread? What are you doing with it?
I can tell you, I don't know that I want to bet the game at all, but I'm not going to bet an Oregon State plus any points based off what I've seen this season. I mean, the way they played against Texas Tech was just not very good. There was not a lot of effort, and that's the thing. It's if you're not going to be as talented as other teams and you're not going to play hard, well, then I can't back you and you know, want to bet on you. But 35.5, I mean, as you said, the highest point spread in Civil War history, that is a lot of points, man. And so I don't know either way. If I had to bet and my life was on, I would take Oregon. I would lay the points just because I do think that Oregon, even if Dan Lanning takes his foot off the gas and they go second, third stringers, they're probably still better than Oregon State's first stringers. So I don't think that'll actually stop them from scoring. It's not as if he's going to pour it on, but, you know, if you're still running for, you know, 5-6 yards a pop, you're going to go down the field and eventually score at some point. So I would take Oregon laying the points. I just don't know how Oregon State stays in this ballgame.
Yeah, and you hit on something that I think a lot of sports fans struggle with. There's a trust factor you have to have with your team, right? You have to trust your team if you're going to root and go, and I'm going to buy a ticket, I'm going to go see my team play. You have to trust that your team's going to show up to play. You know, now, when you go to wager on a team, you really have to trust that they can come through for you. And I think a big problem, and I think a big part of why this spread went from 27 to 35.5 in a blink, like it just jumped, was because nobody trusts Oregon State. And we've spent so much time in the last 3 weeks just, you know, sort of beating up on Oregon State and talking about how bad they've been and undisciplined. They weren't ready to play. And Trent Bray has had to, you know, face some pretty tough questions that, you know, justifiably so. But I think in the end, I'm kind of looking at this game going, you know, can they play clean? Can they tackle? Will they run? Will they play hard? Like, I don't know, because I don't trust them. And I think that's what you're hitting on when you say, hey, I wouldn't take them and the points.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, because I think if Oregon State had showed anything against Texas Tech, John, and the spread was still 35.5, I would be comfortable taking Oregon State. But it was an effort thing against Texas Tech. And you know, Baron Morton, the quarterback for Texas Tech, really good player. That offense is, you know, a very good offense in the Big 12, and we're going to see how good they really are going to Rice-Eccles Stadium earlier in the day, 9 a.m. on Saturday. Yeah. It's going to be a great one. But, I mean, I think Oregon has just as explosive an offense, if not more explosive, than Texas Tech, and I saw Oregon State, you know what, for lack of a better term, I saw them quit in the game against Texas Tech. I don't know that they're going to quit in a rivalry game, but it's going to be the same thing. Oregon's probably going to get up big early, and you just wonder where their heads are going to be after this tough four-game stretch that they've had. You know, it's been a very emotional four-game stretch, and this is kind of the end of it, right? Like we talked about Oregon State's schedule going into the year, you kind of break it into four or break it into thirds. This is the end of the first fourth, man. It has been a very emotional, very bad for the Beavs. I don't know. I can't trust what their effort's going to be game in and game out. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I couldn't trust any type of backing of the Beavs, even if I'm getting 35.5 points.
Scott Barnes, the AD at Oregon State, with a vote of confidence for Trent Bray earlier this week on this show. And I believe him. I don't think he's just saying, hey, he's my guy, and then expects to fire him like a week or two later. Sometimes you get the dreaded vote of confidence, and then it's not really a vote of confidence at all. But I think Barnes wants to see, you know, he kept talking about, I kept pressing him and saying, well, what do you want down the stretch? What do you want to see? He wants to see progress. He wants to see trajectory. He wants to see, you know, Oregon State. They're hoping to get some hope by the end of the year. Now, the schedule is built to be very forgiving late in the season. Like, you know, you sort of looked at their schedule. It is really a invert, like they're coming down the hill, right, as the season goes on. But this Oregon game is not a winnable game, and so they're going to be 0-4. And then it's Houston, and, you know, Houston blew out Colorado 36-20, and I think Houston's pretty good. But, you know, they're middle of the Big 12, and I think they're going to end up finishing right in the middle of the Big 12. So I think Houston's a decent team. I want to see Oregon State be competitive in that game. If they win that game, good for Trent Bray. He's got some traction right away. If they lose that game, then I'm going to start to put them on watch, because then it becomes, you know, Appalachian State, then Wake Forest. And then I start to go, okay, at what point as an AD would you lose confidence? There is sort of a marker point where the returns start to diminish and you start to go, okay, now it makes more sense to part ways with Trent Bray than to keep Trent Bray. And I kind of think that over under for me is right around 0-7. Like, if you can get to, you know, the seventh game of the year and you don't have a win, you have to be asking yourself, like, all right, is this going to turn around? And if not, that's about when I would start to go, all right, is Scott Barnes going to make a change? It makes no sense to do it in front of the Oregon game. It makes most sense to do it after the Oregon game. This is a very different calculus than the one at UCLA, where Deshaun Foster, you know, might have had the worst loss in program history, losing to New Mexico in a game that was just not competitive in the fourth quarter. Like, that was a really bad loss for UCLA. Losing to Oregon, you know, you don't want to lose to your rival. It's not going to be great to get blown out again, second week in a row for Oregon State. But I kind of think everyone expected it when the schedule came out. And so I think everybody kind of said, that's a loss. So I think the focus for Trent Bray is coming down the way. And I kind of do wonder, like, who's going to be at Autzen Stadium? Will Beaver fans show up at all at Autzen Stadium to see this game? Because I did notice about a week ago, I hadn't looked lately, but I'll check the prices during the commercial break. I had noticed that the secondary ticket market was soft for this game. And maybe, you know, understandably so, because this isn't, yeah, they're down, tickets, the get-in price right now is around $60. So this is not your Civil War for the Roses. This is not your, you know, man, Oregon is going somewhere special and so is Oregon State. You know, it was just not that long ago that Dan Lanning suffered a loss to Oregon State that knocked him out of the conference championship game. But, you know, this is not that kind of game this year. So I think if you're going to the Civil War, what are you going for, Stephen? Like, you're just going because, hey, it's fun and you want to see Oregon play Oregon State, and you could say you went to a Civil War game, because this does feel like kind of a non-conference early season game that we have seen for years at Autzen Stadium, where, you know, a different kind of fan shows up for the game.
Yeah, I think if you are a lifelong Oregonian, or you love this, you know, you love this rivalry for whatever reason, I think this is a perfect opportunity to get out and go to that game, right? Like, a lot of people haven't been to a Civil War. Like, I've been to one, but if I really wanted to go, if I was a big time fan of one of these teams, even if I'm an Oregon State fan, I mean, when else are you going to be able to get into Autzen Stadium this cheap to watch your team play? And I think that is a big reason. So I think that would be, for me, that would be like the main reason, just to say, hey, yeah, I went to a Civil War game, or I went to the Civil War game that was the biggest point spread in series history. Like, I think that's another reason. But if you're a Beav fan, I think you're just going to give moral support right now, because you're right. I mean, going into the season, we all thought, well, there's no way that Oregon is going to lose this game, or Oregon State's even come close. I think it's more of just a moral victory type of thing, and say, look, man, I still support you, Beavs. I support you, Trent Bray. You know, Scott Barnes and Trent Bray both talked about that. They need Beav Nation to support them and just trust the process. It's one of those things where you're just showing your support, man, and you're saying, look, I do believe in what's going on. I believe in Trent Bray. I believe in Scott Barnes, that they can turn this ship around.
Well, for Oregon State, you know, I think 2026 season is going to be a, you know, sort of a landmark season, because people who had thought Oregon State was left for dead and should just join the Mountain West will get to see the conference reconstituted. But ideally, you don't want to go into that 26 season with just, you know, you're flatlining. You have no momentum. And so I think it's going to be really important that even if they stick with Trent Bray, they have to win three or four or five games down the stretch. They've got to, in that last seven games of the season, those are winnable games. We had penciled those in, Stephen, as wins. Those were W's. And, you know, I thought this was, you know, they were going to probably beat Fresno State. I had that penciled in as a W. And then I thought they might beat Cal. So I was thinking, oh, you know, they might be 2-2 at this point. They're going to be 0-4. And so, if they're going to get any momentum, they have to play clean against Oregon, and then they have to come out of that. And Trent Bray's got to hold that locker room together against Houston, against Appalachian State. Those are not easy games. Those are tricky games. And there's a reason why Oregon State got all these games. There's a reason why Oregon State got Cal in the opening weekend. There's a reason why they got Texas Tech, in that third game. Nobody wanted to play those schools, right? So nobody wanted to play Texas Tech because everybody knew they were loading up. Cal was dicey, but nobody knew how good they could be. And then, you ideally don't want to play them in week one. You want to play like an FCS opponent and get a tune-up. They didn't have that luxury. And then nobody wants to go to Appalachian State. Houston's dicey. So, there's a reason why they got these games. They were leftovers that other schools were going, we're buying our way out of this, or we don't want to go there. And so this schedule is not ideal, but this is a manageable schedule down the stretch. And if they are sitting at 0-7, 0-8, 1-9, that is going to be a big-time failure because there are some W's on the back end of this schedule. Trent Walker, wide receiver, Oregon State, is coming up. I want you to leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Simonton. Simonton around the corner. Is he going to score? Bears! Bears win! The crowd is on the field! Look out, everybody! The Beavers have won! The Beavers beat the Ducks! Kent Simonton wins it for Oregon State! 44-41!
What a game!
44-41. Kent Simonton with the big touchdown and an Oregon State Civil War win long ago. Feels like a long time ago. Here to talk about the Civil War, Trent Walker, wide receiver, Oregon State, in a segment brought to you by Jamba. Life is better blended. Trent Walker, what are your Civil War memories as a kid watching these games?
Yeah, I remember growing up, the two guys that stood out to me the most was Jaquiz and James.
Yep.
I know my parents would never really let me go to the games in Eugene. I think I only went to one in Reser. I remember they were like, it's just too hostile. Because I was young back then, so
yeah.
All I know about the Civil War is just how hostile the environment is at both stadiums.
How are you guys feeling going into this game? You're coming off a tough one at Texas Tech. How's the locker room? How's the mood? How's the mentality?
Collectively, I think we still feel good. I think it's real easy to get up for a team down south. I think the guys are looking forward to it. We're staying in our home hotel, so we don't got to get on a plane or anything like that. This is why you play football. This is like the biggest rivalry for Oregon and Oregon State, so it we're looking forward to it.
There's been a little bit of trash talk this week. Surprised me a little bit. Normally it's quiet, but Ducks linebacker Jerry Mixon had this to say.
It's a big rivalry game. Everybody pop out in Oregon. And just from being here that they are little bros and we go out there and kick their ass.
How'd that go over in your locker room?
I'm not gonna add fuel to their fire, but we definitely heard it. We got us fired up.
Yeah. I imagine, I don't know there's such a thing as a bulletin board, but, is that the kind of thing that, you see it somewhere and guys kind of pass it around, or does it get talked about?
A little bit of both. I know a couple dudes sent me the interview or whatever. I heard guys talking about it in the locker room. It is your classic bulletin board motivation, but, it's whatever. We got to earn some respect down there.
Yeah, it does come down to that, doesn't it? You got to play well. And you guys, have had stretches where you do and then stretches where you don't. Can you put your finger on the differences when you're playing well, what's going right, what things are clicking?
The communication, I think, especially on the offensive side, when we're communicating, we're getting our jobs done. And it last week was kind of proof of that. It was before the rain delay, it was loud over at Tech, and we were anticipating that, but nothing really gets you ready for not even be able to hear you think. So it just goes back to over-communicating in the huddle, over-communicating on the field.
I am looking at this game, and it feels like a tall task, but what do you see on film when you look at Oregon's defense?
Yeah, they. I think the thing that jumps out the most to me when I was watching the tape was how well they communicate on defense. I think they play well as a team. You're not going to get that many like busted coverages or whatever. But in terms of like defense, like the DBs and the corners, I think they're all real young. I think they got a couple of true freshmen and some redshirt freshmen who are good players. Don't get me wrong, but I think they don't have as much experience as we do on the receiver end, but I think they're a good defense. They're explosive offense. It is a tall task if you put it that way, but I think we're excited for it.
Yeah, you can't back away from that. We're talking to Trent Walker, wide receiver, Oregon State. Look, the Texas Tech game, you know, your coach after the game kind of talked about the effort not being there, and that is something you can control. Do you feel like that got addressed at practice in through conversations with the coaching staff that, you know, guys are going to run to the ball and guys are going to play hard?
Yeah, that was a big focal point this week. I think I heard Coach Gundy yell more this week than I have in the 2 years of being with him. Huh. Likewise with Bray. So I think just the energy at practice was pretty high. I think it was, I don't want to say it was higher than like camp, but
right.
For having our schedule be where it is and having the energy be what it was good to see. And I think that goes to why we feel so good going into this week and moving forward in the season.
I think a lot of people are trying to pay attention to the locker room and go, hey, is this locker room together? I know it's hard. Like, you know, look, I played on a college baseball team where our coach got fired at the end of the year. It was a hard year. And it took a lot of focus and concentration when you're not getting the result to focus and lock in and continue to do the things that you know result in success. The collective psyche of the locker room, you hit on it a little bit earlier, but you know, does Coach Bray still have this locker room? Does he have guys willing to run through walls for him?
Yeah, no doubt. I think, I'm not a fan of seeing all the tweets on Twitter.
Yeah,
bashing on Coach Bray. I think, I'm gonna take responsibility as myself. Like, we didn't execute. I've been saying that for the past 3 weeks on the show. Like, we're just not executing. I don't think it has anything to do with how Bray coaches. I think if there was anyone that this team would run through a wall for, it would be Coach Bray. I think in the locker room, we're all still together. I haven't seen any fingers being pointed. I think we're obviously our record's not in a good spot, but I feel like our team's in a good spot.
Trent, I got into Jamba the other day and I got the protein berry workout drink, and I highly recommend it. You can get a little whey protein extra put in there. What are you drinking lately?
I tried the Maui Mommy, I think it was called, and a green yummy, and both those were pretty good.
You like them both. All right. High reviews. Do you get a Jamba? Because I know on a road trip, you get a Jamba as you're getting on the plane. If you're just taking the bus to Eugene, do you get a Jamba on that trip, or is that too close to game day and kickoff?
I don't know. I feel like I don't remember getting one back in 23.
Yeah.
I don't remember getting one. But I know with the hookup that Jamba gave me with the EQ guys, it being like National Equipment Manager Day next week. I know I hooked them up with some stuff over at Jamba.
Nice. Like that. You're going to be wildly popular. All right. So big game, film prep. Does the prep stop at any point for you? I mean, is there a point of watching so much film that you're, you know, sort of paralyzing yourself a little bit, or do you watch it all the way till, you know, maybe you're getting on the bus?
I don't think there's a point where you can watch too much film. I think you can always watch more film. I spend a couple hours a day watching it throughout the day. Like, I don't sit down and watch 2 hours straight. Like, I'll sit down and watch 20, 30 minutes here, 20, 30 minutes there. And then usually if it's like a night game, I'm still watching film that Saturday just to kind of remind me of like my little tips that I've written down and whatnot. So, I mean, you can never really watch too much film. You can never know the opponent well enough.
Now, in prior years, maybe back in the day, you used to be able to see kids on both sides who grew up in this state. It's become harder because I think more of the rosters have become kids who are not from the state of Oregon or maybe even Southern Washington. You got a lot of California kids, but there's some guys over on the Oregon side that, you know, played at Lake Oswego and other places. Do you have friends on that from Central Catholic or LO or other schools that are over on the Oregon side?
I know a couple dudes. I was never really like that close with them, but I know a guy that went to Jesuit. He played O-line over there.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not friends with too many Ducks.
You ever consider going there?
No, can't say I did.
Was it Oregon State all the way for you, or what other choices did you have?
Well, I didn't really have that many choices coming out of high school. I know I had like 4 Division I offers. Like 2 of them were FCS, and then I had Army and Air Force.
Wow.
And then I think, and the story was on signing day, Coach Cookis, our old special teams coordinator, he gave me a call and was like, we have a preferred walk-on spot for you if you want it. And I was going to commit to Portland State, and as soon as he gave me that call, I was like, yep.
That had to be a good call. Did you ever consider Army or Air Force? Did you go on a visit at either one?
No, I couldn't visit any of them because I was like prime COVID. Mm. But I was heavily considering Air Force. It was between Air Force and Portland State because my grandpa was in the Air Force. So I had some ties over there.
Grandpa probably had some stories. Did you grow up hearing stories about the Air Force and the Academy?
Yeah, I heard a couple. I'm sure he censored a good amount of them, though.
I like that. All right, listen. Good luck on Saturday. I will see you at the stadium. Give them hell, and appreciate you coming on every week, and enjoy the Jamba in the meantime.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, man.
All right, there he goes. Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. He's sampling the Jamba menu lately. I did try the protein berry workout drink. It's pretty good. I felt good drinking it, too. That was the biggest thing. But interesting, too, because in prior years, we used to be able to look at these rosters. And it's part of this is just the changing landscape of college football. I'm not knocking on Oregon here. Like, I don't expect Oregon to take 20 guys in their next class from the state of Oregon. But, you know, they've got Atticus Sappington, who was at Oregon State, who's a Central Catholic kid. There are a couple of offensive linemen from Central Catholic and a defensive back, Zach Grisham, who's from Central. You know, he mentioned Jesuit. There's 2 kids from Jesuit, Charlie Pickard, the offensive lineman that he mentioned, and Cormac Flaherty, who is a DB. And then there's Lake Oswego. Obviously, Justice Lowe is from Lake Oswego. A couple Lakeridge kids, including Luke Basso. You know, it doesn't have the flavor. And Stephen, maybe you can speak to this a little bit because you went to high school in this state. I think we used to see a lot more kids who grew up watching the rivalry. And I get that, like, some of the Oregon players are saying, yes, this is a great rivalry, and the Oregon State players say it. But I really wonder how much they understand about the rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, that was the whole thing, is you had to choose. You're either a Duck or a Beeve. And then even as you get older, like, and you start working at a place, I remember, you know, there'd be Ducks and Beeves stuff everywhere, and everyone's wearing their one gear. And it was a good, friendly rivalry, but it was also a little hateful rivalry as well. Like, you knew, like, Oregon did not like Oregon State, and Oregon State did not like Oregon. And I feel like you still get that with some people that are a little bit older in their generation. Like, they still have that true hatred of the opponent's, where I think now Oregon has become such a national brand. It's changed a lot, but you're right. When I, you know, growing up in this state, it was either you got to choose, man. You got to choose a duck or a beaver. Like, you got to choose, and you got to choose early. And if you swap, we all know it. We're all going to make fun of you. So,
yeah. Atticus Sappington, he like changed
that,
jerseys.
Like,
yeah.
That would never have happened, I mean, 20, 25 years ago. I couldn't imagine that happened. But, I mean, it did happen, though. Wasn't, Thomas Tyner? Wasn't that one
yeah,
of them?
Yeah, Thomas Tyner switched sides.
He switched
also,
sides, but
he kind of, he wasn't really playing at Oregon.
Right.
He was, you know, so it was like, but Sappington went from starting kicker to starting kicker.
Right.
That's a big deal.
I do wonder if that's going to happen a little bit more nowadays if Oregon State, let's just say, has a player that's from Oregon. You know,
what about Trent Walker?
Trent Walker, right.
Yeah.
Like, and Oregon's like, hey, look, man, come on down the road, down I-5, and we can get you a little bit more money. I could see it happening a lot more. But
yeah,
you're right, man. It's just different day and age. But I feel like the hate has gone away from a lot of it. So it was good to kind of hear the when you asked Trent Walker, do you ever consider Oregon? He's like, no. Do you have any friends from that play at Oregon? No, I don't.
I really don't.
Like, I love those answers because it kind of brought back the old school nostalgic of, look, we don't like those guys.
I remember when Chip Kelly got here in the very first year he was coaching a Civil War game, he made a horrendous mistake. He said, you know, it's just like every other game. It's the Super Bowl every week, and people just killed him. He just got killed. And so then in his second season, I can remember it was the Sunday night of, you know, Civil War week's about to start, and Chip Kelly got asked, you know, what do you think of the Civil War?
It's a Super Bowl. Every game's a Super Bowl for us. So I don't know how we can get bigger than that. That's why when people say we diminish it, we're not diminishing. It's the biggest game we're ever going to play. So it's the biggest game ever.
The biggest game ever. And he got killed on it. And remember Pat Kilkenny back in the day. This goes back to like 2008. He was the athletic director at Oregon. And then he went in front of like the Duck athletic fund crowd after the Civil War win, and he punctuated.
That was one of the happiest days of my life, Saturday night. And maybe I'm just that shallow. It was a great night to be a Duck. And, you know, I don't know about you guys. I was so sick and tired of hearing about the Beavers. And, you know, the Beavers are disadvantaged, and we have all this stuff. And that's nonsense. Football is a game of toughness. It isn't about what color your uniform is. We went out in the field and kicked their ass.
Kilkenny laying it on, you know, as he only could. And then, of course, we've got these great montage moments. I'm going to play them throughout the show today. But this was the Civil War in 2010. I'll let this take us to commercial break.
Fourth down, less than a yard at the Oregon 36. No score, first quarter, offset eye. Nichols goes in motion, turn, give to Quiz. Quiz has the first down. Thomas out of split backs, fourth down, gets the pass away, out of shotgun, Paya coming, screen to Barner, and the Beavers have the tackle, and the Beavers get a key stop and take over. On first down, the ball is on the carpet, and I think the Beavers have recovered it, and they have! Cats out of shotgun, let him pull the pass from center, Cats to Quiz, makes the catch, open, touchdown Beavers! And the snap is low, and the kick is blocked. The Beavers, if they can pick it up, can return this. The ball is loose. The Beavers block the extra point. Now they lateral it to Paya. Paya lateral is to Dwight Roberson, and the ball goes out of bounds.
Cats on the snap, straight drop to throw. And, oh, man, the ball's popped up into the air. And intercepted by the Ducks at the 30. How about the interception by Terrell Turner? Give it, nope, back to throw. Looking left, now over the middle. Throwing to the right. He's got Barner. Touchdown, Oregon! Cats, straight drop, time again over the middle. It is tipped and intercepted. Thomas, the line from beside him now. Look at the ball, going to come left. Got some room. Can he get the corner? 10, 5, 3. He's in for the touchdown. LaMichael James just kind of cruises into the left-hand corner. Back to throw. Pressure comes. Here's the screen. It's caught by Davis. Get it upfield to Buchanan inside of the 10. He's going to score! Drew Davis! Alvarado waits for the snap. No, it's a fake. Oregon runs it. First down up the middle. 40 near midfield. 45, 40, 30. Inside of the 30 to the 25. On the 20-yard line. Inside of the 15. And finally out of bounds. Inside the 10-yard line. And high snap. Give it to Barner. Again, nice squirts through. He's going to score! Barner! Touchdown, Oregon! On the snap. Give it to him again up the middle. He's going to score! LaMichael James! And only a couple of more plays remaining. And they got him!
Good.
Chip Kelly just got drenched. Coach Kelly just got soaked. And Thomas takes the snap. And the field is rushed by players. And the fans want to come out but won't be able to. But they'll celebrate in the stands as the team heads down.
down to the end zone. And fans everywhere, 114 years they've waited. 2-1. It's official. Oregon is going to be in the BCS championship game. Can you believe the magical season this has become? And it's not over. And somewhere down in that humanity, a soaking wet Chip Kelly is talking to the media about his team and what they have accomplished. Unbelievable to have been a part of this.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oh, we're just able to get things going. You know, the guys did a great job of front blocking to where I could get to the edge and burst upfield. And when we took it inside, they did a great job. Marcus did a great job pulling defenders away. It was just an overall great effort by the team.
That's Kenyon Barner talking about the Civil War in 2012. Here's Tony Graziani, former Oregon quarterback, talking about the mentality around the Civil War.
Sometimes you're sitting in the locker room going, man, I don't know if we're ready, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm not liking the attitude of some of the guys right now. And other times, you know, you think you're ready, and you come out, and you just lay an egg. Some of it has to do with the other team, but most of the time, especially with the talent that they have on the team right now, and some of the talent that we had back when I played, usually if we played well, we were going to win, and it's just tough when they come out and hit you in the mouth, and it's just all how you respond to that.
Tony Graziani, the former quarterback at Oregon. Here's Sammy Parker, former wide receiver.
I was just pretty much looking forward to each and every game that we played. It was nothing that I was looking forward to making to the next level because I had to perform then to just kind of pull myself into the NFL to make sure I had a great career and a chance to play in front of a big crowd.
Sammy Parker wanted to play in front of big crowds. How about Mike Hass, former wide receiver at Oregon State? He talked about the Civil War.
I don't want to see it every year. You know, I know if Oregon State gets some monetary benefit from it, I get it. But, you know, screw them. They left. you know, that's all I have to say about that. We don't owe them anything to play that game. You know, and with the directions the programs are going after they left, left the conference and left us to fend for ourselves, you know, it's kind of a more of an unfair advantage than it was in the past. So I say, you know, let them go schedule, you know, Georgia or somebody.
Mike Hass didn't want to see the game. He's hitting on something there, Steve, and a lot of Beaver fans reached out to me and said they were not happy with Scott Barnes when he came on the show earlier this week. And he said, hey, this series is going to continue. We're working on it for 27 and 28. Nothing is officially signed, but both sides seem to want to continue it. I've been banging the drum, but I am in favor of the Civil War continuing because I don't want to see the tradition lost. I don't want to see the rivalry end. But then I hear a guy like Mike Hass there talk about it, and he's played in this thing. And now I'm not so sure. Like, maybe they shouldn't play it.
Yeah, and the comments by Scott Barnes and then led by yesterday where it seems as if Oregon's going to get the home game in 27 and we're just going to skip right over the Beavers' home game. I think that's making a lot of Beaver fans upset and just saying, look, Oregon left the Pac-12, they left you in the dust, and now you're catering every single thing to them. When in 27, it should be at Reser, right? Like, if we're going off of every other game, it should be in Reser Stadium and not at Oregon at Autzen Stadium. So I think there are a lot of fans that are upset about this game. I'm in the camp of that they probably shouldn't be playing this game anymore. There's just it's too much. It's too different. I love tradition. I love reminiscing and all this kind of stuff, John, but
sure,
it's not the same. We're playing in week four right now. We're never going to play at the end of the season. There's never going to be anything on the line between these two teams. There's not going to be a Rose Bowl on the line. I mean, like that. It's just a non-conference game that would be played at the end of the season, and they're on two different levels. Go through these schools, John, that are in the top 10, top 15 in the nation. What school has a non-conference opponent, a rivalry that's in the group of five that they play every year? There is none. I can't think of it.
Colorado State.
But they're not. But Colorado and Oregon are on completely different levels. They're different universes. Georgia doesn't play anybody. Miami doesn't play FIU every single season as a rivalry game. They don't play South Florida as a rivalry game. Like, Oregon is on too big of a level to say, look, we need to play Oregon State every year. Oregon State stands no chance in this game.
I think Oregon really wants to play the game because they know it's a win.
It's a win, and you don't have to travel.
But you don't have to travel, and it helps your home schedule.
And so if I'm Oregon State, besides money, what else are you getting out of this? You get a Big Ten team to come kick your butt every
single season.
Well,
you're getting money. You're getting money, and you're getting the idea that you got a Big Ten opponent coming to your building. You could never buy that.
But that's not going to help you when Michigan's you lose by 40 every time.
Michigan's not going to come play you. Ohio State's not going to come play you. You'd be hard-pressed to get Indiana and Purdue to come back. Like, Purdue came just last season. I don't think they're going to come back. Like, it's going to be really difficult to get those teams to come play you. And so Oregon State is going, look, we cannot get this game anywhere else. Let's take it. Maybe it helps our home schedule. But there is a demoralizing element to this where if you go and you lose by 40, and every year you're losing by 40, that's not a rivalry.
You talk about a five-year plan for the Beavs. Let's just say it's 5 years from now and Oregon State has something going. They have some traction. Does it look better to lose to Oregon by 28 or to beat a Portland State by 45? I think it looks better. It doesn't help you if you're going to lose to Oregon every single time if you're trying to make the College Football Playoff.
Well, Boise State did it last year. Boise State used a narrow loss at Oregon as part of its resume. I had not seen a team get that much run out of a loss, maybe ever, and certainly not in the College Football Playoff era. That loss at Autzen Stadium helped Boise State get to the playoff and get seated where they were. And so I do think there's value in it if you can close the gap. But the problem is the money is getting so far out of whack then with the haves and the have-nots. There's such a canyon between them that, you know, I'm in favor. Let's continue it. Let's watch it for 5 years. But if it's 40 points, I might feel differently like 3, 4, 5 years from now. I reserve the right to change my mind. We'll see what happens. It feels to me like they're going to play this game, and we'll continue our Civil War talk with Bryce Betcher, the linebacker at Oregon. He's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
All three of my kids play youth sports, or played youth sports, or continue to play youth sports, however you want to say it. We've seen some soccer. We've seen some track and field. We've seen some volleyball, lots of volleyball. Lacrosse, saw that too for a while. I'll tell you what I've started seeing at some of these events, some of these games. When I was a kid, we would play like a soccer game, and maybe at halftime somebody's mom would come over with a giant Ziploc bag with orange slices. You know what I'm talking about. Somebody had taken the time to cut up some oranges, put them in a bag. They were cold. Bring them over at halftime. We'd get an orange slice. Or maybe at the end of the game, we'd get an orange slice. And then, you know, what I started seeing with the oldest kid is like then came the post-game goodie bag. Because it was somebody's turn to bring the goodie bag. And you had a Capri Sun and maybe a granola bar in there back in the day when it first started. Tell you what I've been seeing lately, and I'm kind of not on board with it. I've been seeing a box of donuts show up at the end of the youth sports game. Like, your kid or my kid needs a sugar rush and 1,100 calories after playing in a game. Kind of defeats the purpose. It's like walking out of your gym and getting a chimichanga. You know, you don't do that. You don't walk into your local Plaid pantry or your 7-Eleven after having a nice workout and say, oh, you know, I'll take a chimmy and a big gulp. No, you're defeating the purpose here. What's with the donuts after the game, Steven? Are they doing this at your kids' games, too?
You know what? I have not seen the donuts after the game, and I'm thankful for that. But I will say, when I was playing youth sports, John, like after the game, you know, a parent would bring the snack, you know, be in charge of the snacks. It would be just like a Capri Sun, and that was about it. Like you would just be like, drink. You're right about the orange slices for soccer. You get them at halftime, all that kind of stuff. Where now it's a whole thing. Like now snacks is a whole thing where they're packing bags. It's a sack lunch you're bringing. It's Goldfish. It's some type of granola bar. It's a Gatorade in there.
And there's a treat in there.
There's like treats.
There's prizes and toys in there.
Yeah,
sometimes.
There's like three or four edible things, and then you get a Gatorade on top of it. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy the snacks that these kids get after the game. I mean,
we're
I was just
control.
A Capri Sun.
You know what I blame? I blame reality television because. You know what happened? I blame reality television for everything. You know what happened on reality TV? The rich and famous started throwing birthday parties for their kids.
Like the Sweet 16s or whatever.
Top. Even the little five-year-olds, they bring in a pony, dressing it as a unicorn. They're spending $10,000 on a DJ and a band.
It's just in case someone takes pictures of the snacks, you can post them on the gram and be like, look at these snacks I brought.
And then when your kid has a birthday party... Like I do think like it's appropriate or it's customary for people to be like, all right, we're going to create goodie bags for the kids when they go home. And then they put like, you know, a bunch of trinkets in the goodie bag and send the kids off with it. Right. Like I should just be going through our garage, taking things I don't want and putting them in these bags, sending these kids home with them. I don't need that. That's an extra tape measure. I don't need that. There's a bunch of ballpoint pens. I have no idea where these balloons came from. These go in the goodie bags. Like just send all this stuff home with people. But so it was like a post-birthday party thing that you go home with a goodie bag, okay? And where's my goodie bag? Did you get my goodie bag? Can my sister have a goodie bag? She didn't go to the party, but could she? So you have this whole goodie bag culture that goes on. It somehow, Stephen, turned into the goodie bag showing up after the youth sports event. Like everybody, like the moms will walk over, whoever's turn it is, to bring the treat after the game. Walks over there with a box. It's very elaborate. These bags, there's toys in them. There's Capri Suns. I get that. Let's hydrate. Let's send them home. But now, last week, it was a box of donuts. I watched my kid. She's lined up. She got a maple bar.
Was it like a birthday? Like, was it one of the kids' birthdays?
No.
Because I've seen that where like they'll bring like cupcakes or something because it's someone's birthday. And I get that.
I've seen it more than one time. And but the whole youth sports thing is like a comedy act. And in fact, we found some youth sports comedy. Here you go.
I like staying in nice hotels. I know my hotel is nice when I'm checking in, and it's the one where all the kids' teams are staying that weekend. Kids travel a lot for being non-professional athletes. I never even thought to sit my parents down at that young of an age and just be like, Mom, Dad, we gotta hit the road. If you believe in me like you say you do, then you'll be excited to take the only 2 days off of work you get per week and travel to a different part of the country and watch me, your son, lose by more than you thought possible. You also might have to develop a drinking habit with the parents in the hotel lobby late at night as you criticize the coach for their decision making. Because there's no way it was your kid's fault because they have your genes and you almost play varsity 2 times. If not now, then when, Dad? I'm almost 7.
Michael Pulaskic there, a comedian talking about the absurdity of youth sports. It's true. And the funny thing, and maybe it's not so funny, is a lot of the youth sports coaches will say, hey, I want your kid to play multiple sports. And then they give you the schedule for the season, and they're practicing Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays, and games are on Saturdays and Sundays. And you go, when are they supposed to play another sport? There's no time left over. Well, yeah, we're here to encourage you to play multiple sports, but, you know, your kid's out of school at 3 o'clock, practice Monday, Wednesday, Friday, game Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, play whatever you want. Like, and by the way, get the Tuesday, Thursday optional private training. So there's that as well. But that whole thing where you travel, and I did this with my oldest daughter a lot. She played club volleyball and she played on a really good club team. And, you know, they were in a lot of tournaments that were not in the area. And I kept looking around going, we're flying to San Francisco to play tournaments, flying to Phoenix, flying to driving up to Seattle, playing teams from Texas, and I'm going, are there not teams in our region that we can play? Like, are we flying over a, we're flying over a lot of people here to try to get these games with these teams in Phoenix and Sacramento and the Bay Area and Seattle and other places. Like, do we not have nets and courts nearby? And I remember thinking, like, you know, at the beginning of the year, they said, okay, this is what it costs to play club volleyball, because I had heard nightmare stories about what it costs. And then I went, oh, that's not that bad. And then I looked back at the end of the year, and I was like, how many airplane tickets did I buy? How many rental cars did I get? How many nights and hotels did I spring for? And by the way, she's 12, as it was pointed out by the guy. He said 7. You believe in me, Dad, don't you? That's part of the whole allure of it. All right, we've got some punch it audio. We're going to take you right into the best sound from all around.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of Sam.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio, presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, Texas Tech is going to Salt Lake City, where they're going to play the Utah Utes on Saturday morning. Bright and early, 9 a.m. kickoff Pacific time. Kyle Whittingham, Utah coach, says the big noon kickoff is a big deal.
Yeah, I think there definitely is. The community's excited. Our players, you know, we had a great practice yesterday, and you know, we're not doing anything different out of the norm, you know, as far as our usual preparation process. I mean, if there was a better way to do something, we'd do it every week. But the guys had a little more bounce in their step yesterday, and they're all excited about the challenge.
Guys had a bounce in their step. They're excited for the challenge. I really like Utah in this game. Utah and Texas Tech are both good. They might be the two best teams in the Big 12 Conference. But I kind of don't think that Texas Tech knows what it is to go play a game at Rice-Eccles Stadium. And I think that is a real wild card. This, again, 3-0 against 3-0. Utah is a three-point favorite. I like Utah in this game, Steven. I got it like 28-21 Utes.
I like Utah as well, but do you think the 10 a.m. local kickoff time is going to have an effect on the crowd and maybe the students as well? Because, I mean, that's the biggest part about playing at Rice-Eccles is that environment. 10 a.m. Yeah. is early, man.
In a lot of cities, I'd wonder. I don't think in Salt Lake City, if you know what I'm saying. Like, I actually don't think that crowd is, like, blowing a .15 by kickoff. Like, that's just not the crowd that it is. What you get in Salt Lake City, because everything shuts down on Sunday, is you get people on Saturday when Utah's playing football. Everybody goes, this is the biggest thing that's going on, and we got to be part of it. And those student section, they lose their minds, and the fans lose their minds. And I have been in that crowd, and I've walked around that crowd at halftime and after games, and I think the stereotype of not a lot of alcohol holds up there. I think there are some crowds that would be hurt by having a 10 a.m. local time kickoff, but not Utah. I think they'll be ready to go. And I think this Utah team's really good. I think Utah wins and covers the 3. What do you think? Do they cover the 3?
Yeah, I think they cover the 3. I think it's a good game, but I love Devin Dampier. I think he's awesome, and I think he should be in the Heisman race. I'm hoping he has a nice game and he gets in the Heisman race here.
Joel Klatt talking about Dante Moore, Oregon's quarterback. He'll be in the Civil War suiting up against Oregon State. Here's Klatt.
I think this guy is going to wind up in New York as a Heisman finalist. He can do it all. Dante Moore, the quarterback at Oregon. Dante Moore is a sensational player. Oregon has scored 17 touchdowns and kicked 2 field goals in the 22 drives he's been on the field this year. He is accurate. He plays on the right timing and in the right rhythm, and with the proper balance to throw the ball really well down the field. They got weapons everywhere. He's very smart, gets them into the right play constantly. Their offense has already moved to a point where it was with Bo Nix in his second year rather than where it was with Dylan Gabriel last year in terms of the intricacies, what the quarterback is going to handle at the line of scrimmage, whether that's in protection or killing to a different concept, whether it's run or pass. He's handling all of that. So he's got that preparation side, and then the skill jumps off the tape to me.
It's a fancy way, Joel Klatt, of saying that Dante Moore looks really good in a good Oregon offense playing against inferior competition. He's not going to get a big test this week against Oregon State, but it's coming. It's coming at, you know, State College, Pennsylvania. in a couple weeks and with a whiteout crowd. And that's where it's coming. That's where Dante Moore will be judged. Tim Tebow giving some advice to Texas quarterback Arch Manning. Here's Tebow.
I'd encourage him. Like, man, you're a gifted player. You're a really good player. You just need to be encouraged. Remember it for the love of the game. He's at a location right now with great coaches, great players around him. But there's just a lot of pressure. And pressure's real. Remember the love of the game and play for it. And you don't have to make every play. You don't have to be perfect.
Play for the love of the game, says Tim Tebow. It works. It just might just be that Arch Manning had too much hype around him, right? You think?
Why didn't they ask him about Caitlin Clark coming back from injury, too? Tim Tebow, right. Caitlin Clark, Arch Manning. It's like the perfect ESPN combination.
Did a panel.
Right, yeah.
Did a panel. You know, the love child of Caitlin Clark and Tim Tebow is Arch Manning. That's basically it. Rick Neuheisel, former UCLA coach, talking about the problem of firing your coach early in the season. UCLA fired their head football coach, Deshaun Foster. Problem is, you got a transfer portal, and you have what? You have a rule that says guys can suit up for four games or fewer, and then redshirt. So you got some players at UCLA going, I don't want to give away my year.
For all the young men on the team who have not used their redshirt year, they are going to be inundated with calls from agents. Are you interested in looking elsewhere? They're going to be receiving calls from all sorts of other schools, wanting to know who their agent is so that they can talk about the potential of leaving now or at least stopping your season, basically putting your career on timeout so that you can let the games go and then you can transfer when the transfer portal opens in January. The transfer portal for anybody who loses their head coach opens for 30 days immediately. So they can do that, but they want to finish the quarter of school at UCLA. They're on the quarter system. Virginia Tech, I'm not sure. I'm sure it's semesters. So that they can do that, which is problematic for making a decision this early, right? Because you could literally find yourself without a football team.
This is something that you think UCLA probably considered, right? When they were firing Deshaun Foster. And you have to think Martin Jarmon, the AD at UCLA, saw the loss to New Mexico and said, this is rock bottom. We got to get out now. But there is a real danger here that there are some key players at UCLA who just go, I'm going to play maybe one more game or not play any more games, and I'm just going to worry about myself. I do think that is a factor and will be a factor. And for everybody who thinks UCLA hit rock bottom, 0-3 might not be rock bottom. 0-12 is out there somewhere. Clayton Kershaw made a big announcement. He announced he is retiring at the end of the season. Here he is getting his 3,000th strikeout.
The ravine rises, ready to erupt.
Clayton Kershaw will retire after this season. I just love the tweets and the people saying, this guy defines what it is to be a Los Angeles Dodger. Stayed a Dodger his whole career. You know how easy it is to stay a Dodger, Stephen? This isn't like staying a Mariner or staying a member of the Cleveland Guardians your whole career. You're a really good player. You came up with the Dodgers as a 20-year-old in 2008, and you stuck around.
Yeah, not tough when you're really good and they're going to pay you a lot of money to play for a really good organization that puts, you know, a lot of hitters around you, a lot of good fielders around you, some good bullpen around you. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But Kershaw was awesome, John. He's one of the best of this generation. And, 3,000 strikeouts, can't take that away from him. We're not going to see that for a while.
ESPN's College Game Day is heading to Miami versus Florida. Lots of people think they should be going to the Illinois-Indiana game. Florida's got a 1-2 record.
Want to find the best storyline of the week. Now, a lot of times people look at that and say that always has to be the game between two teams that have the highest ranking, if you have a ranked versus ranked game. But it's a little bit more than that. I think you look for storylines, what's compelling, where you have been, factors into it also. I think this is the place to be this week. Number one, because I think Miami has looked like they've looked really, really good.
Yeah.
So you've got that aspect of it. And then the last two games that Florida has played have been, you know, really disastrous. First from a self-inflicted wound and the penalty standpoint, the loss to USF, and then the multitude of turnovers that they had against LSU. So that's a little bit of a storyline, too. We sort of find ourselves back in the same place with Billy Napier, yet it's a really talented Florida team. It's the right place to be, and those types of things go into it. What's the biggest game? What's the best storyline? And also, what's the best atmosphere?
I disagree with Reese Davis there, who's carrying some water for the ESPN family. Look, Michigan, Nebraska, Auburn at Oklahoma, Texas Tech at Utah. Those all might be better games and better matchups. But the part he's not saying is ESPN is a media partner with the SEC and the ACC. This is a game they want to own. This is real estate they want to own. And it's not because of Florida. It's because of Miami. They want the Miami story to be in their stable. They think Miami's really good, and Miami is a flagship program right now and certainly highly ranked with a lot of anticipation. The Billy Napier storyline, you know, his seat's warm again. That's coming down the pipe. But this is about ESPN wanting to say, we're staking a claim for this Miami-Florida game because we want Miami.
Also doesn't hurt that Florida plays in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, this is ESPN on ESPN, these are our two partners. Let's prop them up. And by the way, we got to get us some Miami before Miami gets away from us later in the season. By the way, playing a game on the CW last week. So there's that. All right, coming up, Bryce Betcher, linebacker, Oregon. Stick around.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Civil War Saturday, Autzen Stadium. Oregon linebacker Bryce Betcher here to talk about it, joining us now. How are you, man? Are you all fired up yet?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How soon is it to, like, get, because you kind of have to build towards kickoff, right? I had football coaches back in the day. They'd say, let it brew. You don't want to leave your good stuff, like, you know, on Thursday. What's that ramp up like for a linebacker?
Man, you know, I wish we were playing today, to be honest with you. But, you know, like your coach said, you got to let it brew. You just got to keep preparing, studying the opponent, and let it rip on Saturday.
What do you see on film when you look at Oregon State?
Well, they like to run the ball, 12P, use their tight ends and block and run downhill. They throw some shots down the field. They got a, you know, strong arm quarterback. You can throw it pretty far and, you know, pass the ball on third down. But the game's won and lost in the trenches, so it could be physical.
If you're self-scouting and you watch maybe Northwestern, you know, let's self-scout a little bit. What do you see that Northwestern had a little success with?
I mean, they definitely ran the ball on us to begin with. They were winning first down a lot. Like, obviously, when our starters were in, they didn't score 1 point. But they were doing a good job running the ball on first down, so made their second and third downs doable. So we got to do a better job this week, you know, limiting the yards on first down.
Were you surprised? You made a hell of a play, by the way, on a pass play early in that game. But were you surprised that they put the ball in the air the way they did? Because I thought with a little bit of success, they might try to shorten the game a little bit. I thought they might just run and see what they could do.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely did shorten the game compared to, you know, Oklahoma State. But, yeah, no, I was surprised, especially after the first few attempts, that they kept on throwing it. And, you know, we picked them off a few times, so that was good.
Yeah, you almost got one, right? And then you did get one, like, a couple of passes later.
Yeah.
Were you kind of kicking yourself for not grabbing that first one?
No, I mean, I knew in my mind, like, if it was catchable, I definitely would have caught it. It was a little bit out of reach. So, I mean, I was like, man, maybe I could have had go-go gadget arms and got there. But, you know, it was definitely felt good to get that second one.
What are your memories of this series? I'm curious.
Memories, to be honest, man, today during team meeting, we were talking about 2022. is my freshman year when we were up like 31-10, like 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, and they ran the ball every play and beat us. That was a pretty sour feeling. And then there was a poster board that was put up around town that said one in the trenches, and it was a picture of all their old line. Yeah. So that one was definitely ingrained in my mind. There was the game, I want to say it was 2009, maybe 10, with Chip and Masoli and Kenyon Barner and Garrett Blunt. That was a good game and sent the Ducks to the Rose Bowl, so that one was pretty cool.
Was at that game.
Yeah. Good ones.
The baseball Civil War series and the football Civil War series, how do they feel different to you?
I'd say similar, man. I'm obviously there's more hype and awareness around football just because it's a bigger sport. But and obviously in the past, I feel like Oregon State's kind of always beat Oregon in baseball. And then once, you know, obviously my freshman year in the past few years, we've been beating them in baseball, and it's been a little bit more of a fair rivalry. Both are really good. I'm going to miss it.
You're a South Eugene High School kid. We had Trent Walker on earlier. He's a kid who grew up in the state of Oregon. I think you guys probably have a different perspective because you probably grew up, you know, around this and watching it and seeing it a little bit. Do you find yourself having to explain to some teammates the history of it, or is it just another game to them? Or tell me how that goes down when you're talking to other guys who maybe guys from LA or other places.
Yeah, I mean, guys that are out of state don't realize the magnitude of the game, so that's my job, and other dudes on the team that are from in-state to, you know, help people realize what kind of game this is. You know, you'd like to think everyone treats it like we would, but that's not the case when you don't grow up around it. Like in our team meeting today, we had a player-led meeting and showed a couple clips and, you know, helped guys realize the magnitude of the game, so I'm going to come out ready to roll, and hopefully all the guys do as well.
You and I sat down at Big Ten Media Day and did a little talk, but, you know, I was kicking myself for not asking you this because, you know, you're a walk-on, right? And Dan Lanning has brought it up a couple times. He said Bryce Betcher came here for a backpack, you know, and now you're in an era where, you know, guys are getting compensated, and there's probably not, I don't want to call it rags to riches, but, I mean, there's probably not a greater example of the guys who are walk-ons in your era who then end up as key contributors, starters, team captains. That is a long, long journey. Does that feel like a long way that you came?
Yeah, man, it has been quite a journey. Hasn't been, you know, obviously the road that anyone or myself would expect, but I feel like that's how a lot of, you know, stories and journeys go. It's a windy road and a lot of setbacks, but it's been incredible. Loved every moment.
You ever think about quitting?
I have, you know, I definitely have baseball and football at numerous times throughout my career. Like I said, there's probably more days where, you know, stuff wasn't going the way I wanted it to than, you know, stuff was going the way I wanted it to. I'd be lying to you if I said I hadn't.
I think it's good for people to hear, right? Because, you know, you end up drafted by the Astros in the 13th round. You have a great baseball career at Oregon. You're having a great football career at Oregon. And there's a lot of people out there that may, you know, I don't care if they're an athlete or not, they may have the thought of quitting crosses their mind. What kept you going? What kept you from going, I'll just play baseball, or, oh, I'll just play football?
I'd say just the love for both sports and the love for the university. Like, I knew I was in a really unique situation, and I had two great coaches that were willing to support me through it. I mean, obviously, I had to work really hard and earn my keep in both sports, but both the guys were willing to communicate and, you know, help me do both. So I think just realizing that I, you know, was gifted an opportunity that not a lot of people have, just realizing that is what kept me going.
How did schools miss on you? You know, you're at South Eugene, and I want you to go back and think about it. You know, you're right under Oregon's nose, you know, Oregon State. You know, how do schools not fall over themselves giving Bryce Betcher, you know, a scholarship, and you end up walking on? Or did they, and you chose to walk on?
No, man. I mean, I had one scholarship offer, and that was to the University of Utah for baseball for like 25%, and everything else was walk on. So, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, man, I mean, Oregon's not a highly recruited place. I always thought I was a pretty dang good high school player and baseball and football and basketball. Maybe I didn't do enough camps or didn't, I don't know, man, to be honest with you. Couldn't tell you. I mean,
I think the state gets a bad rap. I mean, I think you look back. I mean, let's look at the history. Bob Lilly, he grows up in, Eastern Oregon. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Mel Renfro, Portland kid, Pro Football Hall of Fame. There are examples of guys. Terry Baker wins a Heisman Trophy. There's examples of guys who've come out and done big things. Kevin Love, Kyle Singler, Damon Stoudemire in Portland. I mean, you're just another guy in the progression that, this region produces athletes. Do you think that we don't get a good we don't get a good rep as far as the recruiting trail?
No, I would agree. I don't think we do. I think Oregon's definitely very under recruited compared to a lot of other states that are, obviously more populated, and you'd say, I guess, more players come out of it. But I think the ones that do come out of Oregon that are good end up being great, just because you have to have that walk-on mindset or that underdog mentality. And when you have that mentality when you're playing ball, it carries you a long way. I've always had that when I've played, and I think that's a big reason why I've been able to do what I've done.
Then when they inform you that you are no longer a walk-on, what was that conversation like?
I mean, obviously, it's a pretty great feeling. I mean, it's all your hard work paying off, but at the same time, I'm just kind of thinking in my head, I'm like, man, about damn time.
Right.
You feel great, but it's like, that's something you've been working for. And, I'm very confident in my skills and what I was able to bring to the table. So a little bit of both.
It's interesting because you may have another chance to get that kind of feeling, right? If your baseball career continues, you always see those videos of the guys who are in AAA who are getting the call up, right? And my dad played AAA baseball. He was a shortstop in the Mets organization. And, he talks fondly about spring training and, everybody's trying to get to that next level. I don't know if there's a similarity because I think, the minor leagues, compare that to being a walk-on, little different, right? But you may get that call one day with a manager going, hey, Bryce, you've been called up to the big leagues. You're playing center field in Houston tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think it would probably be very similar. A lot of guys are obviously probably blessed and happy about it, and I'm sure some other side of them is like, man, about damn time.
Right. And, hey, who was your first call when they told you you're on scholarship? What'd you do? What was the first call?
First call, I called my dad. That's my first call.
He had to be crazy proud of you.
Yeah, no, he was pumped. But, that's kind of his mentality of the about damn time. I think he was the first one that said that to me because he's obviously been, the one who's believed in me the most out of anyone in my life. So, he's always in my ear telling me how, awesome I'm doing or, how shitty I'm doing. So he's on both ends of the spectrum.
Well, you think about all those games that your parents gave you rides to in baseball, all the tournaments, the practices, your mom probably had to give the treat at the end of the Little League game. How many times your parents showed up for you I'm sure your dad was sitting there going, I'm paying for him to go to the University of Oregon. And now they kind of get to go do they come? Obviously they go to the games, right? I mean, you're local.
Oh yeah. They're always out there.
That's gotta be crazy. You ever look up? Cause you probably were in the stands once upon a time.
All the time, man. Yeah. I used to have season tickets over there. It's section 15, I believe, and row 14. Yeah. They don't sit there anymore. I got parents and grandparents that I get them tickets now, so they sit in the family section. But, it's
nice.
Pretty cool to be part of it.
All right. You got a big football game coming up, and then you got another game after that. People keep asking you. Are they asking you, hey, are you looking ahead? Or is that question tired yet?
A little tired. I mean, I'll be lying to you. Obviously, everyone knows Penn State next week, but being an in-state guy, I'm not even worried about that right now. I'm just pumped up for this Saturday.
I love it. All right, go get it. Good luck to you on Saturday. I'll see you there, and good luck down the road. We'll talk again.
Sounds good. I appreciate you. See you Saturday.
All right, Bryce Boettcher, there he is. He is your baseball player at Oregon who is now in the Houston Astros organization, drafted in the 13th round of the 2024 draft. And he is your linebacker. And so, kind of cool, Steven. We got two in-state kids. Trent Walker grew up a Beaver fan, and Bryce Betcher, who grew up a Duck fan, on today's show. And I love that perspective that both of these guys attended games and watched Civil War football games, and now they're playing in Civil War football games.
And that's how it should be, right? You know what? You get these guys, and you know, they grow up loving the team, and they go play there. I think that's great. I love to hear also, you know, Bryce even said, you know, they're showing clips of old games to try to get these guys educated on you know, on what this rivalry means, because I do think that there is probably a lot of players on this team that don't know, you know, the history of the rivalry between Oregon and Oregon State. So I think, you know, a guy like Bryce can attest to all that kind of stuff, and they're showing the clips to show the history. I think that's great. If they're going to continue playing this game, we need to continue educating the players on what it actually means.
Here's something I was thinking about, though, after the Trent Walker interview. We, you know, we kind of had talked about the Civil War and what it means and all that stuff, but it's almost like there's two Civil Wars. There's the Civil War that maybe ended right around the end of the Jonathan Smith era and the end of the Pac-12. And it's then there's everything that happened before it. And maybe in history, maybe if we went back like to the early 1900s, the 1920s, 1940s, we would have people who participated in those games say, oh, it's almost like there was a division before the war and after the war. Like it feels like there's two civil wars, because I want to play a clip here, right? Here's Mike Bellotti talking about his favorite Civil War game, okay? Mike Bellotti, former Oregon coach.
Probably my favorite game and the most lasting memory is the last Civil War I coached in 2008. And we were underdogs. We had to go to Corvallis, and we won 65-30 or something like that, and we scored on offense, defense, and special teams. And Jeremiah Johnson had an unbelievable game. Jeremiah Masoli had an unbelievable game. And it just was one of the greatest. I didn't know it was going to be my send-off. That wasn't my intention at that time. Mm-hmm. I actually figured out later on that I wanted to walk away. But I couldn't think of a better game to end the Civil War than that one, simply because when you're the underdog, it's great to go into somebody else's house and win. And when you I remember Chip Kelly, who was my offensive coordinator, said, "Coach, they should change the speed limit." I go, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, it's only 55 between Corvallis and Eugene." I said, "Well," he says, "Well, we scored 65. They should raise the speed limit."
You guys did raise the speed limit in that rivalry.
There it was, raising the speed limit, Mike Bellotti's favorite Civil War game. I'm going to leave you with a little Civil War montage here as we go into the break here. I'm enjoying this stuff. This is the 2011 Civil War.
All aboard!
And the snap, and back to throw. Mannion has time, dumps it over the middle. It is picked off, I believe, and it is intercepted, and Michael Clay has got his second interception of the year. Thomas LaMichael to his left, goes to the right side now, and will get the ball up the middle and pushes and shoves his way into the end zone, going backwards over for the touchdown. On the snap to throw, Mannion looks over the middle, a lot of time, throws it, it's intercepted, Kiko Alonso with a pick, and down at the Beaver 46-yard line. Thomas, empty backfield now to throw again. Looks right, dumps toward the end zone. Got him, Barner, touchdown, Oregon. On the snap to throw, Thomas looks, goes toward the end zone. He's got him there, and he's got it. Garrett gets it to DeAnthony. Thomas to Thomas, touchdown. Thomas to throw, looks right, looks over the middle. Wide open, touchdown, David Paulsman. Darren steps up, nice step up, and he's got DeAnthony at the 15 to the 10. Touchdown, Oregon, DeAnthony Thomas. And how about Darren Thomas standing in there with the pressure coming on second and five, and to throw again. Thomas looks down the middle, throws it, got him, throws it high, but Lear over the grab, and he is going to get it inside of the 10 and the 5, and a touchdown! And he did it off of a poorly thrown ball. He made a great catch on it and then the run. And he got a block downfield to finish it off. Chip Kelly runs across the congratulations and the hug for Mike Riley as Oregon has defeated Oregon State in the 115th Civil War. The final, Oregon 49 and Oregon State 21. And the Ducks will host the first ever Pac-12 championship football game next Friday night.
Riding me is
back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Really cool stuff to have two in-state products, Bryce Betcher and Trent Walker, two kids who grew up in the state, coming on the show today, one playing at Oregon, one playing at Oregon State. Civil War game taking place on Saturday at Autzen Stadium. Kickoff, 12 o'clock, Big Ten Network. Never thought I'd say that. Ducks going on the road to Penn State next week. Is Oregon peeking ahead? We'll find out. Other big games, Washington State in the Apple Cup, 4:30 on CBS. How irked was Jed Fish after losing the Apple Cup last season? How locked in are the Huskies? I remember Jed Fish ran that speed option play on fourth down at the goal line in the loss to the Cougs last year. He was irritated in the postgame news conference. He looked irritated on the field. I wonder how much of the celebration from Washington State is sticking in the craw at Washington. I think we find out.
Also, you talk about Oregon, Penn State next week. Washington hosts Ohio State next week. So maybe a look-ahead spot for the Huskies as well.
A couple other big games going on. Cal's at San Diego State. I expect Cal to be 4-0. It's crazy. Here's a sleeper one, Stephen. Michigan State 3-0. Going to USC 3-0.
Yes.
8 o'clock Saturday night on Fox. Point spread, USC's favored by 18.5 points. It jumped off the board at me. That spread is wrong. It's wronger than wrong. Aiden Childs going home. Jonathan Smith going home. I think Michigan State is going to keep that game very close.
I agree with you. I don't know that they can win the game. I don't know that Michigan State can win this game, but I think they can keep it close. We look at that Purdue game, John. USC went into Purdue, got the win. There's the 3-hour delay because of weather. But you know what? Purdue drove the ball in USC. They had three interceptions thrown inside the USC 20. So you think they won by what? I think it was they won by 17 points, something like that. USC did. Purdue had the ball inside the red zone three more times against USC and turned it over, including that pick six by the big fella on USC, which is always fun to watch. But
yeah.
I don't know that. I think USC is getting a little overhyped here. They just cracked the top 25. I do love Jaden Maiava. I love Mekhi Lemon out, wide receiver. But 19 points is a lot. Now, the other thing for Michigan State, though, John, is Nick Marsh, their star wide receiver. He is banged up. They don't know if he's going to play or not. That would be huge if he does not. But I'm with you. Aiden Childs has protected the ball this year, only one interception thrown. I think that's the key for him. As long as he doesn't turn the ball over, he is one of the most elite quarterbacks, talent-wise, I think, in the nation. So I'm with you. I think Michigan State keeps this one close.
I think they're going to play close. Look, Jonathan Smith went in there with Oregon State as a double-digit dog in 2021. They were a 13-point underdog. They won the game 45-27. I don't think Michigan State, I'm not calling for them to win either, but I think uncomfortably close. I have it like a three-point game. I think USC probably survives at home, but, you know, part of this is, it's tough for a team traveling across time zones. We've talked about this. They're going to the West, 8 o'clock kickoff.
Well, that's 10 o'clock Michigan time?
Yeah, that's a tough thing. But, you know, DVD, Daniel Vanderite, is Jonathan Smith's right-hand man. Daniel Vanderite was the director of football operations at Oregon State. He went with Mike Riley over to Nebraska. He came back to be Jonathan's guy at Oregon State, and then he's left with him to go to Michigan State. The reason I bring this up is the travel accommodations, the pace, what time do you fly in? How long do you sit around the hotel? Where do you eat? What do you eat? How far away from the stadium? What buses you arrange? DVD has done this before for years for Oregon State. So I kind of think like some of these Big Ten teams are doing this for the first time. This is not going to have a first time feel to it for Michigan State. This is an Oregon State staff. This is an Oregon State travel panel. This is, they'll stay in the same hotels that Oregon State stayed in. They'll have the same bus lines. This is not a big deal for DVD. And so I kind of think Michigan State's going to go in there, and Aiden Childs, he's a Long Beach kid. I kind of think Michigan State's going to go in there and give a scare to USC. I think it's going to be a great game Saturday night, 8 o'clock on Fox. I'm excited about that one. I got another Civil War montage. How about this one? 2017, Stephen. Let's see it. I think I got time for it.
Hey! Every single one of you guys. Proud of every single one of you. And the thing I like about this football team more than anything is we have so many unselfish guys on this football team. And when you have a team full of unselfish guys, man, there's no telling what you can get accomplished right here. I mean, I'm seeing receivers out there just going and blocking. They're not getting as many catches, but they're blocking. They're having fun doing those things. Nobody coming here and disrespect the host.
Freeman to the right side of Herbert on third down and a half a yard. And it's Freeman, left side, and walks into the end zone. And again, no, off of play action, a quick throw to the outside, a little kind of almost a bubble screen. A ball came out, ball's loose, and Oregon's got it.
I'm winning.
And Johnny Johnson the third. Mitchell stays out to the right here. Back to throw Herbert on long. Third and long. Way down. Going to the end zone. Back in the end zone. Cash Bay. Was he in there? Did he get it? Yes, he did. Touchdown. Dylan Mitchell.
Hit my line when they need a favor. I'm in my zone. I put the throne on Revis Island.
And here's Herbert. Empty backfield. Now Royce back two. Now fake the handoff. Wants to throw. Going deep. Got Nelson. Way down at the 20s. Did he grab it? He did. It's not Nelson. And it is not Nelson. I think it's Jalen Redd. Jalen Redd.
My empire strong as iron and full effect.
Herbert Runny, twins each way, back to throw. Little pump fake, throw over the middle. Caught. Touchdown, Breland. Jacob Breland. And a dart from Justin Herbert, who is putting on a show today.
I'm ready on a pole. Bouncing. Tuckers in his traps. I'm winning. On the flow.
Herbert wants the ball. Here's first down at the 13 of Temple offense. Turn to give it to Freeman going left. Try to cut it. Does inside the five. He'll stroll into the end zone. Royce Freeman having the kind of game here in his final game at Autzen you want to have.
It was just emotional. I mean, it was great, though. To have my family out there, my mom, my brother, just out there to support me. And, I mean, just flashbacks of all my memories in Autzen, and I'm just very appreciative.
Throw the ball. They go for it on fourth down, and they will not get it. Catch made, but short of the first down at the 19-yard line. Beavers pull out the trick play, and Oregon did not go for it. Two receivers each way for Herbert.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Yeah, we've definitely come a long ways. And this was a goal of ours, to play some meaningful games in November. The scenario is this, to be able to play in the championship game, got to fall our ways. But ultimately, it comes down to us at 12:30. That's the biggest piece of this, is, you know, to find a way to win a game. And if we can do that, we tie for the co-champion of the league. We lose out on a tiebreaker if it doesn't fall our way scenario-wise. But any rivalry, you know, championship on the line, this is big-time stuff. And we're going to have to go earn it, because this is a tough place to play against a good team. But I know our guys will be excited about it.
That was Jonathan Smith. Doesn't seem that long ago, 2021 Civil War game. Is there a Civil War before the end of the Pac-12 and a Civil War after the end of the Pac-12? I can remember last year, right around the Civil War game, lamenting that, you know, this is good for college football. These teams should be playing. Rob Mullins, the athletic director at Oregon.
Absolutely. 100% want to play that game in every sport. It's just, you know, obviously we're, whatever, 34, 35 miles apart. It's incredible fan interest. Great for both programs, no matter the sport. So, yeah, we want to continue that series.
wants to continue the series. Dan Lanning said he wants to play.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for college football. It's a rivalry that certainly means something to us here, and I think means something to them. So it's good to see games like that still exist.
There it is. It still exists. It will go on. It looks as though the sides are going to take a year off next year, and we'll see how that feels, and then continue the series in 2027 with what appears to be about a five-year deal that the sides are going to agree to. A lot of Oregon State fans are upset about it, but Oregon State seemingly wants to play it. We have the 5 at 5, the 5 biggest stories in sports. We're going to lead you right into Thursday night football right here on 750 The Game. Big game, Bills playing the Miami Dolphins. Let's do it, Stephen.
The 5 at 5. Number one.
Well, John, the Los Angeles Clippers and Steve Ballmer are not looking good in their thing again with Aspiration. As remember, Aspiration supposedly gave Kawhi Leonard a bunch of money to do no-show jobs. Well, now it has come out, according to Paolo Torre, who's just breaking more and more news about this story. So the Clippers had previously stated that they cut ties with Aspiration during the 2022-23 season. During the season. But according to records and court documents obtained by Paolo Torre, Steve Ballmer, the president and owner of the Clippers, personally invested $10 million with 14 games left in the 2022-23 season when the company was falling apart. Now, the co-founder of Aspiration was also asked under oath today about Steve Ballmer's deals into Aspiration. He decided to plead the fifth. Not looking good for Steve Ballmer and the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard in this whole situation.
Well, here's the thing. We've all heard a leaky faucet, and it goes drip, 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 drip. And when you first hear it, you don't think much of it. And then after a while, you kind of have to deal with it. And, you know, I've had a lot of editors over the years who have talked about that drip, drip, drip of the news cycle. That is going on right now with the Clippers in this story. That faucet needs to be fixed. It will continue to drip. Paolo Torre is too sourced. I've been in his shoes. He has shaken the trees enough that now the fruit is starting to fall all around him. And very soon, I think you'll see the Clippers come out. And I think what they'll do is they'll say, look, we're not going to admit to any wrongdoing. We realize this looks bad. We've made some investments. It's a bad look. But, you know, we didn't necessarily, we didn't necessarily know that this was a circumvention of the salary cap, but we'll take our medicine. It's headed in that direction because I don't think the rest of the league's owners are going to, I don't think they're going to be okay, knowing that the Clippers operated this way. And by the way, to what end? Kawhi Leonard, what was the highlight of the Kawhi Leonard era with the Clippers, Stephen? Like, you know, to what end did they break the rules or seemingly break the rules?
Well, they built the brand new arena that they have, and I think Kawhi Leonard had a lot to do with that because they made him somewhat relevant. But yeah, you're right. They didn't have any postseason success. I believe they got to the second round one time. They lost to the Nuggets this year in Game 7 where they got absolutely embarrassed on the road. I mean, that really hasn't been a very successful run for the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard is a big part of that because he's been hurt a lot.
To what end? Like, at least Barry Bonds, we went, all right, what did he do? He cheated, cream in the clear. He hit a bazillion home runs. To what end?
Number two.
Well, speaking of really good players, Clayton Kershaw, the Dodgers pitcher, has announced that he will retire at the end of this season. Kershaw, 18 seasons in the major leagues. He's a 3-time Cy Young Award winner, 1-time MVP in the National League, and a 2-time World Series champion. Listen to this, John. Clayton Kershaw, with a minimum of 2,500 innings pitched, has the lowest regular season ERA in the live ball era with a 2.54 ERA, live ball era 1920 and forward to now. So the lowest in the regular season, but has the highest postseason ERA in the live ball era with a minimum of 100 pitches or 100 innings pitched, 4.49. So he's the best regular season pitcher maybe of all time and one of the worst postseason pitchers of all time. But Clayton Kershaw, he was awesome. You know, in the 2000s.
Was he awesome, though?
Wasn't he? He was.
One of the
regular
best,
season.
You know, three Cy Youngs, an MVP.
That's pretty good, dude.
Yeah.
Three times Cy Young.
3,000 strikeouts. Okay.
I'm, just because he's a Dodger, you're not giving him credit. I get it.
It's a different standard. He's a bum.
He was really good.
He's
so.
All right.
Cool to see him retire.
He's all right.
Number three.
Well, how about this, John? In the 2025-26, the upcoming Big Ten men's basketball season, their tournament's going to include all 18 teams 1 year after including 15. So last year they only had 15 in the tournament. Next year they're going to allow every single team in their Big Ten tournament. So this will add a whole day onto the actual tournament. Last year the tournament started on a Wednesday. This year it's going to start on a Tuesday, while the women's tournament is going to stay at 15. But the coaches voted on their specific tournament. So it wasn't like a decision the conference made. They let the coaches decide. The men coaches wanted all 18. The women's coaches wanted to stay at 15. But now we added a whole nother day. And I tell you what, as a guy who loves to like gamble on conference tournaments, I think it's great. Let's add more teams. But, I mean, team number 18 in the Big Ten doesn't really need a chance at the NCAA tournament. I'll tell you that.
Well, put everybody in the tournament. Give everybody a participation medal. Send them home with a donut at the end of it. There it is.
Number four.
We talked about Arizona State football heading overseas potentially, and looks like that they are. It's going to be discussions for the Arizona State-Kansas game in 2026. They're maybe heading to London, according to Brett McMurphy, and they will be playing at Wembley Stadium on September 19th in 2026. I don't find the need to have conference games over there. I don't think that's good, just like I think the NFL. I don't want division games played over in Brazil. Like, if you're wanting to play overseas, just have a non-conference game or a non-division game. But this will be a Big 12 game, Arizona State, Kansas, playing at Wembley Stadium. It's only getting bigger and bigger, John. I just don't like that they're doing it in conference.
Yeah. So it's un-American. Hold your conference games in your home arena. And keep, you know, we need to keep a stake and keep ownership of the things that are, you know, within the borders of the United States. And if you are...
Do you think fans like to go over?
No.
Like, no. I understand money, but like, what's the point of doing this? Fans are not happy. I can't imagine the coaches or players are necessarily happy.
Trying to grow the game. They're trying to grow the footprint. They want TV revenue in another country, not just in another region.
Stupid.
Build their brand somewhere else. Pac-12 tried to do this with the China initiative years ago, where they had Arizona State. This was funny. Arizona State played a game against Colorado in China, and the game tipped off at like 5 a.m. in the United States.
Oh, I remember. I watched.
Yeah. And nobody was there. Like, nobody showed up. It was Larry Scott's big idea, because he was trying to sell China on the idea of, you know, investing in the Pac-12 brand. And the Pac-12 presidents liked it because they thought it was going to result in a bunch of international students going to Pac-12 schools, paying international student fees. You know, there's a lot of... It's all about money. That's your answer to your question.
Number five.
We got about 60 seconds here. Thursday Night Football, Dolphins, Bills. Bills, 11.5-point favorites. But I wanted to bring this up, John. Carson Wentz is probably going to start for the Vikings this week, and replacing the injured J.J. McCarthy. And with the start, Wentz is going to make history. He's going to be the first quarterback in NFL history to start for six different teams in six consecutive seasons. So it's just good to be available, I think, if you're Carson Wentz.
Yeah, the best ability is availability, and there you go. Money to be made, though, still, right? Like, nice.
Hey,
nice
great
career.
Life to be a backup quarterback. Yeah, everybody wants him.
Best life ever. Like, Marcus Mariota play a couple games during the season.
He might play this
clipboard. Pretty not too bad. All right, we got Thursday Night Football coming up. We're back tomorrow with another great show. The BFT Jury tomorrow, always a fun on a Friday right here. Plus, we'll forecast the weekend. And take you right into the Civil War. The bald-faced truth not here for a long time, just a good time. Thanks to Steven, all the interns, the production assistants, and thanks to you as a listener.